Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello and welcome to F1 Explains, the official Formula One podcast, which is here to help you find out loads of brilliant stuff about the best sport in the world. My name is Christian Hugill, and if you've been with us all season, you know I present this podcast with my amazing friend, Katie Osborne. And if you were with us last week, you'll know that for the very first time ever, I was flying solo because Katie was busy with something very exciting. But, my friends, I am truly delighted to announce I am no longer alone. Please give a huge F1 Explains welcome back to Katie Osborne!
My gosh, it's like you're a presenter in real life or something. That was quite the intro. Thank you. I'm glad to be back. Glad to be with the team. Glad to be hanging with our F1 Explains community.
I mean, Katie, in an unlike me turn of events, I overdid it because you were away for 1 week and I made it sound like you were away for 6 months. But
I appreciated it.
Thank you. And I stand by it because, again, for anyone who missed last week, your reasoning for not being here was brilliant. Please explain why you are not here and what happy thing has happened.
For F1 Explains, let me explain myself. I had my husband and I welcomed our first baby, and it was a baby girl, Olivia Hope. She has been a great addition. She's, I think the best way to describe her, she's cuddly napper during the day, and she's a party rock star at night.
Good.
And she keeps us up to the wee hours, and yet then she looks so cute and comfy in the morning. You're kind of like, I can't be mad at this little thing. She's so cute. If you were with us, I think I had mentioned before that she has cheeks from the heavens, her little chunky cheeks, sweet cheeks, and she has a mullet, and that's pretty cool. A little business in the front, party in the back. She is just an all-around, it's pretty amazing, to be able to welcome something into this world. It's so interesting to kind of have work take the back burner for someone like myself. And you guys might hear babies in the background here in the next the next few episodes. So just if you hear that, that's what it is. It's an honest, real baby. And Olivia Hope just wants to join the party as well.
If Olivia wants to get involved, she's very welcome. couple of questions before we get on with the podcast from my end, Katie. Number one, producer Chris asks, is her mullet based on that of Valtteri Bottas? That's an important question to ask.
To be fair, that's one of my favorite aspects of Valtteri Bottas, so I will go ahead and say yes.
Good.
She rocks it pretty well. It just came out that way. And next you know, we're like, well, our baby is we got a mullet kid. It's pretty cool. It's in. It's trendy these days.
The second thing before we get on with it I wanted to say was that, again, anyone who's listened to us since the start of the season will know Katie loves our listeners sending voice notes.
That's right.
Because Katie wasn't around, you know, for the last voiceover recording session when we're making our podcast. I said to Katie, why don't you send us a voice note? And Katie amazingly said to me beforehand, I'm really nervous to send a voice note.
I'm so nervous.
Katie, you present the podcast. What do you mean you're nervous?
But here's the thing. I had said that early on in these podcasts too. I said, I totally get it. If you guys are nervous to send your voice notes, send it via email. And I felt like, I told you, I was like sweating recording that. I got like so nervous, and I got like, it's our own show. But like it made me all anxious. So I totally get it out there. Thank you for those who have gone through the nervousness to send us your voice notes along the way. I now am one of you and I feel it. So it was nice to be able to experience that. And I'm glad now that I'm back in the seat that's comfortable, which is not sending in any voice notes.
you are responsible for a human life and you present a Formula One podcast. And the thing that makes you nervous is sending me a voice note. Excellent.
Hey, I will say in the pregnancy journey and now that she's here, it has been such a joy. I've gotten quite a few F1 and racing little human stuff. And one of the favorites is a book, Formula One for kiddos, basically a Formula One for kiddos book. And it is so fun and so cute. And so I cannot wait to raise her in Formula One land in terms of just the looks, the feels, the vibes and all the things.
We have a new, youngest new Formula One fan. Well, Katie, it is brilliant to have you back. So now you're comfy and settled in, let's get you back in your race seat. Tell us what we've got coming up this week.
Well, we are going to be talking about something that every F1 fan goes wild for, whether it's Ferrari's red or Mercedes silver or sleek black or even Red Bull's iconic dark blue. It's time to talk liveries. This week, F1 explains how F1 cars come to look the way they do. We do have two people whose job it is to make sure F1 cars not only look spick and span and pretty, but also still work well on the track. A livery has to have a bit of style and also a whole lot of substance.
That's very much what we aim for in this podcast too, style and substance. Every F1 fan, every racing fan loves talking about how the cars look, and there is so much more to it than meets the eye. So on the way, we drop in to two of our teams, Alfa Romeo and McLaren, to find out how a car's colour scheme and design is first born, how it then makes it to the car, why that does make a difference to how fast the car can go, what the future of liveries looks like, and even how special one-off liveries are born.
But first, we want to explain some news about F1 Explains. As you know, this is the podcast where you can ask anything you like about the sport, and me, Christian, and a whole load of experts will answer them. Just email those questions like we talked about at the top. Ideally, if you're asking me, a voice note to whyw@f1.com.
Now, we've been doing this podcast since April, and we're honestly so grateful for the messages we've had and continue to have from all over the world, and for the hundreds of thousands of you that are listening in. And for that reason, we have decided to take the show on the road to meet some of you, our awesome F1 Explains listeners.
That is right. We are excited to announce that F1 Explains Live will be coming to you from the United States Grand Prix in Austin, Texas. Me, Christian, and some very special guests will be doing a live show on the amphitheater stage at the Circuit of the Americas on Friday, the 20th of October. If you're at the race, come see us. It's totally free, no extra cost. We'd love to meet you. And if not, don't worry, you won't miss a thing, as that live show will be on this feed after the race. So we'll bring the party to you.
Exactly. So that is F1 Explains Live with me, Katie, and some very special guests who, trust me, you won't want to miss, at the United States Grand Prix. We really hope to see you there. And if you are going to be at the race in Austin and you have a question you'd like us to answer in that special live show, please email it to us. The email address, as Katie just mentioned, is whyatf1.com. And as I say, let us know if you're going to be at the race in Austin, because we might be able to make you part of the live show.
So we've done babies, we've done live shows. Let's get on with explaining how F1 cars come to look the way they do. Now we're starting at Alfa Romeo, where Marcus Hoppegger has been head of group brand with the team for more than a decade. In that time, he's overseen plenty of sponsors, color schemes, and designs. Now, I missed this interview, not because I was looking after a baby. It was before that, but I was doing something equally demanding and loud, standing in the pit lane of a motor race. So Christian welcomed Marcus to F1 Explains. See if you can tell that Christian was looking forward to talking about this topic.
Look, I like liveries. What can I say?
Thank you very much for having me.
It's my pleasure, because I want to be honest with you here, Marcus. I am a car livery geek. I love a Formula One car livery, and I've always liked them. In fact, when you know the PlayStation and Xbox games, you get a Formula One now, Marcus.
I do. We're involved from that too, yeah.
I think my favourite part of the game, I spend far too long designing my livery rather than actually playing the racing game. But I guess someone like yourself can understand that.
I can, absolutely, yes. And it was a real pleasure, because this year we had a unique chance to have our actual C43 livery early in the F1 game.
Excellent, excellent.
Which was great.
Let's go back to basics for a second, Marcus. Why is a Formula One car's livery so important?
Well, I guess you said it, because it's the most visible asset we have. It's what fans see first and want to see first. It's the most iconic asset, so to speak. And also, it has an important performance impact, which we must never forget. But we'll get to that later, I guess.
Yeah, we'll get to that later, because I want to know first and foremost, how long have you been designing the Alfa Romeo livery for?
That is a very good question. It's been a couple of years. I've been with a team for more than 20 years in different positions in marketing, sponsoring, partnership management. Involvement with the car design, I believe, goes back to like 2010-ish and onwards. But I think it's also important to say that especially the Alfa Romeo liveries were always developed in close collaboration with Alfa Romeo and their Centrosella design team. So it's been a while, yes.
Because for those new to Formula One, the Alfa Romeo team as we know it now hasn't always been called Alfa Romeo. In fact, far from it. It's historically the Sauber team, and BMW were involved at one point with BMW Sauber. And as it's gone from Sauber to BMW Sauber, back to Sauber, then to Alfa Romeo, its colours and its design have changed. And I guess you've been a part of that, Marcus.
Yes, indeed. There are many influences with regards to colours and logos and everything. It starts with contractual dependencies, like sponsorship contracts, etc., ownership, etc. So the colours depend on different things and influences.
And how did you get involved in this, Marcus? Because as I say, this is the sort of thing that I love to be involved in. If I hadn't been a broadcaster and you'd said to me, do you want to design F1, the way F1 cars look? I'd be like, absolutely. How did you fall into this game?
Oh, that is a very difficult question. I wish I could remember or give hints on how to do it. It was a lot of learning by doing also, and a lot of experience that comes into it. Because there are so many influences that you have to, and so many considerations, especially when it comes to the car design or livery design. So there's a lot of know-how involved.
And so do you have a graphic design background? Do you have an engineering background? How do you get to be picking colours for Formula One cars?
Probably a rather unusual route. I used to study economics a long time ago, so marketing economics.
I did not expect that answer, I'll be honest with you.
I know, and I kind of slipped into it. But as I said earlier, it's not just me, it's the team that's behind it. So there is someone who actually studied graphics design who has a lot of inputs and contributions.
I love it. Now let's talk about Alfa Romeo specifically. That livery has changed quite a lot in the past few seasons. It was red and white for quite a few years. Now fans will notice that it's red and black. So why that change, Marcus?
I think, again, there are various reasons and influences. We just thought that now was the time, you know. The past couple of years, it was more like an evolution of the design. And then for this year, it just made sense to have a more kind of radical step as well. Also, because it's, at the moment, as it looks, the last year with Alfa Romeo, and to give them an iconic car for their last year with the team, it made sense to do something special.
Yeah, because Alfa Romeo reverts back to Sauber for the next few years before entering a new era. And quite a few of the cars this season have large, unpainted black areas where you can see the carbon fibre showing through. Mercedes being possibly the most famous example of that this season, who went from silver back to black, which they'd been a few years before. But it's not just a design reason for that, is it, Marcus?
You mean the special technical look that carbon fiber gives? I don't know. Have you seen carbon fiber close up? It looks stunning. So first of all, it's a stunning look that I personally just like and love. I think you refer to weight saving.
I do.
Okay. So yes, as I said earlier, there are many things and considerations that you have to take into account when you think about a car livery. One of them, for example, is sponsor logo placements. You have to maximize the visibility of the sponsor logos for the sponsors. Also, usually sponsors prefer to have a uniform background around their logo, so you can't do a wild color break which goes midst through the logo. There are considerations like, for example, the weight of the paint, the thickness of the foil that you use for decals. Regulations stipulate a minimum weight for the car. So the car must be a certain weight or heavier. And if you're below that weight, you can use ballast to improve the performance of the car. So you can lower the center of gravity by putting heavy material low in the car. You can influence the weight balance front, rear, which makes the car better drivable for the drivers, etc. So while it may not be a direct influence for the performance of the car, the indirect influence is rather big. The lighter your car overall, the more ballast you can put in, and that's better for the overall performance. And the weight, stickers and everything else is one part of that.
I think it shows the fine margins in Formula One, doesn't it? That we all sort of think, well,
absolutely,
the paint, the type of sticker, surely it doesn't make a difference. But even that minute level of weight can make a difference to the car. And of course, because teams in the 2023 season have been chasing weight, because the cars have got a bit heavier and are trying hard to stay under the weight limit, is that why we've seen more black on cars this year? As I say, particularly the likes of Mercedes, also Alfa Romeo too.
I think it's definitely one of the reasons, yes. Also, you have to know that, for example, because the cars are made of carbon fiber, which is a dark color, if you want to cover that with white, it requires more layers of paint to make the white show through or avoid the black showing through. If you paint them black, it requires less paint, so it's lighter, or you don't paint it, then it's even lighter. And thing is that it's like the accumulation of things, you know. If it's only 5 grams you save here and 5 grams you save there, over the entire car, it adds up to 300, 400, 500 grams, 2 kilograms, and that really helps.
So do the engineers get involved in the livery design at all? Is there a point where you'll be told, we've got next to no weight to play with, so keep everything really minimal, no fancy stickers, no expensive white paint, please? Or do they say, listen, we've got loads of weight to play with, do what you like, paint it white and yellow for all we care? How much are the engineers involved?
Well, we try again to follow our team approach to this. We work very closely with the engineers as well. They explain to us what the limitations are. We try to follow those as closely as we can. And yes, sometimes there's more leeway, and then sometimes you're a bit more limited with what you can do. But again, there are so many considerations that we already think of. For example, the split lines between different parts. You know, does a design go over different parts? How can we avoid that, or can we do it differently? Because it's also in the end cost relevant. For example, so if you have to paint the part with 3 colors, it costs more than if you don't paint it at all or paint it in just 1 color. So many considerations.
So I think a lot of fans will be fascinated to know that you can't basically just do what you like. It's not a simple case of a blank canvas with all the colours and stickers in the world. There are technical limitations even to the look of the car.
That is correct, yes. There are the technical considerations. And then, I mean, we always look at all the fancy designs, the fans post on social media as well, which some of them look great. They look great. And then you go like, nice, but we couldn't do that for this and this reason. So what they often do is they move sponsor logos around on the car, you know, which is a no-go for us, because those are contractually defined and we can't just take a logo and put it somewhere else.
And I'm right in thinking that certain sponsors, say a title sponsor that have paid the most money to have the logo biggest, it's like, do they pay for like main side pod sponsorship, for example, or rear wing sponsorship? Is that how that can work?
In simple terms, the more prominent, the more visible, the bigger the logo, it is fair to make the assumption that the sponsorship fee is respectively higher.
Yes, of course. A little bit of coy language there for Marcus, not giving us too much into the contracts of Formula One. Now, what's the process, Marcus? How do you start to design it? Is it on a notepad? Is it on a computer screen or a computer program? And how does that go from sort of your brain to a computer or a notepad into the car?
It really depends on which direction we want to go. And also, for example, if we know about bigger regulation changes. So what we try to get in the beginning is just simple concept designs from our technical departments, which is a top view, a side view, basically, of where we currently stand with the development of the car for next year, with a shaded kind of shape, which gives us a first direction on how the car might look. That is 2D, very simple. And then we often start with actually just hand sketches. You know, it's like, okay, we have this color, we need that there. How can we place it so it looks good? That gives you some first ideas of how the car might look. We also use 2D vector programs, for example, where we have the views of the car and then we try to make it a bit more nice than just with a hand sketch. We also use 3D. As soon as we can get first 3D data from our technical department, we try to put that in our programs and think about designs and make visualizations of what it would look like.
And would you start with colors or sponsors or both?
The sponsor positions are based on a conceptual and structured approach, basically. So we know where current sponsors are and must be. We have an idea of where potential future sponsors could go. So that gives us a rough idea of how we can approach the delivery design.
It sounds like it's a bit of a merging of the two, really. You're thinking about both.
It is, actually. Yeah, exactly. I mean, also, if you have a certain idea for the livery design and you have to move a sponsor just a little bit to make that possible. So we think about that as well. It's both sides to the story, basically.
I suppose these next two questions sort of interlink, but how long does it take from an initial concept, be it in your mind or the first meeting, all the way through to it being complete and ready to go and ready to be applied to the car? And I'm guessing that involves thinking about next year's car at some point. So are you starting to think about that process, what, midway through the previous season? How does it work?
We usually start thinking about next year's livery the moment this year's livery has come out.
Excellent.
And then, obviously, we follow the development. You know, how does the car and the shape develop this season? We are in contact with our technical department to learn whether they are planning any major changes on the shape of the car for next year, which gives us already an idea of where we could draw lines or not. So it's a constant process, and then you optimize it towards the end of the year when the first parts are actually produced. And it's always great to see the car come together for the first time, because many people probably imagine that we build a car and then the car stands in our factory and we paint it. But in reality, we produce parts, spare parts, new parts until the last moment of time. So right before the rollout of the car or the presentation of the car, which means we almost never have the actual current car standing in our factory in one piece.
Marcus, there are certain colours that I can't really ever remember seeing much of in Formula One. You don't see much purple, for example. We've not had a white Formula One car for a long time. There was Stewart back in the 90s and 2000s, and there was Braun for a season only. But why is that? And are there certain colours that, for reasons that have never occurred to us fans, just don't get touched in Formula One?
I believe the main reason for certain colours not being represented is that they don't represent any of the teams and their history and heritage or current sponsors. There is one kind of disadvantage of white and larger areas of white with sponsor logos on them is that on TV, it may get overexposed, which reduces the visibility of the sponsor logos, for example. In certain areas of the car, it also makes a difference how thick the decals, for example, are. In aerodynamics, if you have a surface and you have a decal on it, that can change the laminar flow of the air on that surface. So it goes down to those details that we actually look at.
How much are you also thinking about the other aspect of a team's identity? Because, you know, fans also now buy merchandise so much, and whether it's T-shirts and caps, but also anyone who's been lucky enough to go to a Formula One race will have seen the great big massive trucks that take the cars across the world, which are, you know, Aston Martins are bright green and Alpines are blue and yourselves are quite a sleek red most of the time. So how much are you thinking about that as well?
We always keep the overall appearance of the entire team in our minds and the back of our heads when we design the car as well, because the car livery must fit with the overall appearance of the team at the track. So That includes the garage walls, as you said. It includes the trucks and trailers, which must look as one when you're at the track and must identify as a team. Even more importantly, I think it includes the race wear of the drivers, of the pit crew, but also the team wear to make sure that everything fits together, you're recognizable as one team. You also have to keep in mind that it takes a couple of hours to produce a decal and put it on the car. It takes a couple of days maybe to paint a part in a certain color, but it takes months to dye and make the team wear, for example, in the right color. So those are the things you have to think about way before you think about the car.
And we mentioned at the start of the interview, but Alfa Romeo is the title sponsor of Sauber's team. And next year, Alfa Romeo will exit the team and it will become Sauber for a couple of years before Sauber becomes Audi's team in 2026. Now, that means next year a change from Alfa Romeo to Sauber. Does that mean it's a bigger job next year to be thinking how Sauber's going to look?
I think can be answered with yes. although I can't and won't give you any more details than that for now.
Oh, you've taken my next question. I wanted an exclusive on colours or a clue, but I appreciate that that is top secret. But we'll look forward to seeing your new design, Marcus.
And thank you. Do you like this year's design? Or do you like this year's design?
Love this year's design. I really do. And I'm not just saying it because we've got an Alfa Romeo person sat in front of us, but I think red and black looks really slick. I think it looks lovely. And as you say, the carbon fibre complements the reds really well. So I love it. And I'll turn for the final question back to you, Marcus, because I think you've spotted that I like a car livery. I'm one of those F1 fans that really does like it. Have you got any favourites from down the years in Formula One that you think, even if it's not your team, that you thought, oh, that looks really nice? Because I know I've got my favourites from years gone by.
I do, yes. I always like the simple designs, you know, which are not too wild. Also because I come very much from the sponsoring side and understand how important it is for the sponsors to have the logos visible on TV and on the in the images. I must say that I've always thought that Williams and McLaren did a great job with their design. And as you said, there's another team that has a lot of black this year, which I think looks very sleek as well.
Yes, it. I always liked. I tell you what I miss in Formula One, Marcus. I miss yellow. We obviously had Jordan in the 90s and in the 2000s, which I thought looked amazing. And then Renault, when they came back and went to yellow, I enjoyed. And I think Formula One's sadly missing yellow. So if you can pass that on to your colleagues, then I'd love to see some yellow back in Formula One. That'd be great.
We'll definitely take that into consideration, yes.
Well, there
you have the answer to your last question, though.
If that Sauber's yellow next year, I'm taking some credit. Marcus, what a pleasure it has been to talk to you. A really unique insight that I, as a Formula One fan for 20-odd years, have never had before. So really interesting to talk to you.
It was a great pleasure. Thanks again for having me.
Christian, you enjoyed that, didn't you?
I did. Listen, I'm an F1 fan more than anything, and I get as excited as anyone when January, February comes around each year and the new cars are launched. And I had no idea that it all matters that much to the speed of the car. It just shows you that every detail matters in F1.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It sure does. Next up, we're leaving Alfa Romeo in Switzerland and heading to the UK to drop in on one of the most historic names in Formula One, a team that's won 8 Constructors World Championships and 11 driver's titles.
There is the world champion of 1984, Niki Lauda. But of course, the season belongs to one team, McLaren.
Ayrton Senna, the new world champion.
It's been a magnificent season for the Finn, a magnificent season for McLaren. Constructors' championship for McLaren, drivers' championship for Mika Hakkinen.
And is that Glock going slowly?
It is, it's Glock. Oh my goodness me, Hamilton's back in position again. But he is going to claim fifth place, which is all he needs to do to become the 2008 Formula One world champion, Lewis Hamilton.
Of course, it's McLaren, where Lou McEwen has been executive director of brand and marketing since 2017. She's been with the team since 2014, and going back even further than that, McLaren has had lots of different colors and looks. And Christian started our chat by talking exactly about that.
Obviously, back in the day when I was growing up watching F1 in the 90s, McLaren were known for the sort of silver livery in the Mika Häkkinen and David Coulthard era. It then went quite dark, and there was obviously the chrome Lewis Hamilton, Jenson Button era livery too. How have McLaren sort of transitioned from that era and white, even before that, going into the 90s and the 80s, to silver and then to papaya, the striking orange colour that it's known for today? How has that transition happened?
Yeah, and you're right. They're all really key moments of our heritage. And as you're probably aware, this year we're celebrating 60 years of McLaren. So we've gone back through our heritage and recreated some of those liveries in the last couple of months. But as you say, we actually only turned to papaya, not orange. We returned to papaya actually back in 2018. And that was, as you say, after a long era where probably people remember us most, and our success came from that gorgeous chrome colour that you'll remember and you'll refer to. But we went back to papaya in 2018. And there's a number of reasons behind that. I suppose coming out of that era, we're a race team that are essentially funded by our partners. 100% of our funding comes from our amazing partner portfolio. So that previous era was defined by some of those partners, as you'll appreciate. And then coming out of it, we also wanted to look at the future for McLaren and what did that look like? And no longer defined by partners and perhaps a powertrain as we were back in those eras. Who did we stand for and what was that? I think combined with that in 2018, Zak Brown joined the team. And we were also, I think we'd just done our first run out in the US with an IndyCar team at the time. And we didn't actually ever go out to kind of stress test that colour with fans out in the US. But the feedback we got was kind of overwhelming, and there was definitely appetite for it. And then looking at the future of our brand and how we future-proof it, it was a way of us owning that colour papaya back in the sport and standing for something. So we've only been papaya, back for 6 years. And that was part of my role, I think, when I came on board, was that transition. And luckily for us, we're unique as a team in that we don't just have a Formula One car, but we race across other series. So using that papaya colour to unify all of our cars in different countries racing around the world has obviously been a really, really incredible showcase to have that opportunity.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that stands out to me, Lou, about McLaren is it doesn't matter what race series that you look at, whether it be the IndyCar, like you mentioned, and the four different liveries that you guys had for the Indy 500 this past year. It doesn't matter if it's Extreme and it's the McLaren racing out there, obviously Formula One as well. There's this consistency, which I'm sure from a marketing standpoint is like golden. You have figured out that idea to try and figure, you know, that ideal really of, hey, if someone sees something, they think of us. And that must be a key moment in the marketing department.
Yeah, it's a really key part of us building the brand and the future-proofing the brand as we go forward. And I liken our car series as we've built it out over the years. And we've got a new series almost nearly every year over those six seasons, if you also include esports in that as well. They're kind of a band, they're band members. So, but they all have slight different nuances subject to the series that they race in, some technical regulations around that. And also the partners that we have in those series as well. But overall, you look at them and you think they're from the same family, and that's really important for us.
And I'm guessing with McLaren, when it was all, you know, silvers, as we've just discussed, and then blacks, I suppose with someone like Ferrari, you think of Ferrari and you think of reds, not just in Formula One, but also in supercars. Is that with papaya what McLaren's trying to do? So you think of McLaren and you think of papaya, whether it be in IndyCar or a supercar, you just think of McLaren and you think of papaya.
Totally. That's what we're trying to build. And you definitely don't create that overnight. But as we go forward and we've expanded into new race series, that's definitely what we want to have front of mind for people when they see us show up in a different market or a different country. That should be synonymous with us. So, you know, a big part of my role is making sure that we drive the equity in the colour and that people recognise us more and more around the world. So the more you have some consistency like that, hopefully we'll get that synonymous association, further, you know, we've already got it and we're showing it and it's working well for us. But, you know, that it doesn't happen overnight. Ferrari have been red for years. So
where you know, a few more years to go here. And you mentioned something really special was that you designed these in-house, you and the team in general. Why is that so important?
It wasn't always the case. Sometimes the team at McLaren before my time worked with some designers externally. It's always good to get fresh ideas. We've got an awesome creative team now that are based in-house. And I guess the important thing when you design a livery is it's all very well coming up with an awesome thing that looks good, but it's actually got to work on a Formula One car and all of the technical and aerodynamic nuances that we have to consider. So we have to work very hand in hand with our race team and specifically the engineering team and our surfaces and brand team, because this has to be applied at every race throughout the year and be able to switch out when necessary. It's got to deliver, it's got to not just look good, but perform on track. And I think that's where if you can come up with great ideas externally, but when you iterate them and really boil down to the technical detail, you've got to have a team who are on hand with our race team. Consider that probably every 20 minutes as a team, we are iterating our race car throughout the year, right? So it's always a live process of evolution. So all the way through the year, we're obviously looking to push performance on track. We'll have performance upgrades coming. So it's kind of always live and you're always iterating. So you kind of need to have an in-house team that are always on it. It's quite a exacting process, let's say. And often, you know, we can come up with some great big, bold ideas around different designs. But when you actually apply it and then have to apply it in the field and deliver on weight savings and whatever else it is you've been challenged with by your aero team, you know, you've got to iterate and actually you come out with something that hopefully looks good, but it might not be exactly where you started from the original concept.
You know, I think one of the things that I have picked up here is that obviously that consistency, again, from a marketing standpoint, from a fan standpoint, from the longevity standpoint is key. Then you kind of take a look into a special livery. Why is that something that you guys are willing to take, quote, you know, maybe a chance on, if you will, knowing that you guys are building the consistency otherwise?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think there's a fine balance because you don't want to spin fans out and utterly confuse them by showing up looking different all the time. In actual fact, some of the guidelines that we work through with the FIA and Formula One now more stipulate that consistency because equally from a spectator sport, we don't want to be confusing fans. So there's certain guidelines that we have to conform to now as well. But we do have those moments throughout the year where we do what we'd call a full livery swap. And if you go back and remember the golf livery that we did back in 2021 in Monaco, that would be considered a full swap. And you referenced earlier, I think, the Triple Crown livery that we've just run both at the Indy 500 and also the Monaco Grand Prix this year. Those are big moments for us because we can really storytell around them. Hopefully they still feel McLaren owned. So they normally talk to something from our history or our heritage. And both of those examples that I just made actually really talk to our heritage. And I think we're really lucky as a brand because we have all those liveries that we spoke about earlier. We can dive back into and kind of recreate, but future-proof them a little bit. So, and then it provides you with just a great opportunity to storytell around them. So that's kind of what we've done in those last two examples, for sure.
Well, I want to jump in on a couple of those examples, Lou, because I don't know if you can see the room I'm recording in, but in the very background, there is...
He has like a dining room associated in his past of just like memorabilia of F1. This guy is...
Well, there is a car. I'm going to go get it.
Yes. And it is true. He, as a real fan, this is a keepsake, right?
So this is, for obviously the benefit of our listeners who can't see this being an audio product, I collect model Formula One cars, and this is the 2008 Lewis Hamilton silver chrome title winning McLaren.
And this is one he keeps close to his actual room.
Well, Lou, your eyes lit up when you saw this. And actually, this era of McLaren, the chrome, is something you bought back slightly for this year's British Grand Prix. So you combined it with that papaya. So why do something like that for the British Grand Prix?
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, this year's our 60th birthday. So we've been celebrating a number of moments. Actually, for the British Grand Prix this year, we worked with our partner Google, and they wanted to showcase a special livery with us and celebrate one of those moments. Obviously, one of their products is chrome. And I think when we sat down with the team and we looked at the opportunity, it was a very authentic, nice storytelling opportunity that played back to the chrome livery. Actually, chrome as a brand was also established in 2008 when that car came to the track. So there was all sorts of reasons why it made total sense to do that. That car, I'll just say as well, my eyes lit up because I, at the time, worked for Vodafone and was the title was one of the title partner team at McLaren. Also watched that car win that year. So it means a lot to me as well. And actually as well, we know it's a fan favourite. So it's your favourite, but also sentiment online has always been positive about that. And we actively listen to what fans are saying. And also Lando and Oscar actually both grew up watching that car on track. And they had kind of, I think they tried to pin Zach down and went, come on, bring that livery.
for everybody across the world, really.
But, you know, liveries are, they're awesome things because fans, we're having this whole podcast about a livery, right? Which shows that people like talking about them. But actually that week when we launched the chrome livery here, the livery was pretty polarizing because a lot of the fans wanted more chrome on the car.
And interesting.
We've got that interesting position to make sure that we're future-proofing the brand, as we spoke about, right? So we've still got to show up on track. We've still got to feel like a McLaren. So there were lots of people that like, we want more chrome. We've done a kind of reinvention of it, I suppose. But interestingly then as well, as you look at the sentiment as we went into the British Grand Prix weekend, if you remember, it was an awesome weekend. And once we finished qualifying on Saturday, the sentiment was just incredible about that livery. And then all the fans wanted us to keep it forever and ever and talking about it. So they're very emotive subjects.
Yeah. And that is what is so neat about, you mentioned liveries. It's I work a lot with classic cars as well. And this idea of they tell so many stories, like you're mentioning, the external, what they look like. They personalize these cars and there's a connection, right? And that is something, as a fan of the sport, as a fan of drivers, as a fan of a team, you want to feel like you can connect and you can tell the stories alongside the teams as they are telling the stories as well. That's so fascinating. And thank you, Christian, because of course, you add the little prop here. I wish everyone could have seen that. One thing I found really fascinating about McLaren over the last year was some of the digital advertising. Now, not necessarily getting into the weeds about the advertising aspect of it, but I am kind of curious how the digital advertising, which if anyone's had the opportunity to see it, it's, you know, changing throughout a race or throughout every other race, there's a different sponsor on cars. How does that change a livery and or does it impact it at all?
We were the first team to run that. We kind of unveiled that last season. Do you remember when football pitches introduced that dynamic branding around the perimeters? In effect, it's effectively branding on the car, which changes, and there's panels in the car where the branding changes, a little bit like that football pitch technology. And it's different technology, of course, but that's effectively what's happening. So instead of being a static brand, you can rotate. So if you were, in fact, our partner Google has the branding on our car at the moment. So it could be Chrome or it could be Android. They're two different brands that they promote under their partnership. And it can switch between them during the race. So we can control it remotely. We can send a signal to the car and then that branding changes throughout the race.
Okay, I have two questions on this. The first is, I'm a big football or soccer fan. I go to a lot of football, soccer matches, and I see those advertising boards that change, the digital ones, and they look heavy. So how on earth does that work with Formula One, considering weight is everything? And secondly, is this the future? Are we going to see more of this?
Great questions. This particular project that you've picked up on with our partner in that probably for way over 2 years. And the reason it took so long to uncover was, as you pointed out, the weight issue, because you don't want any additional weight on the car. And when we started out, the technology as such that we had to carry on the car weighed about 350 grams and it was just too much. So actually we've been going on a journey to whittle that down to make it a product and technology that we can run on the car without causing adverse weight. So you're totally right. And that's a massive consideration. So we've come a long way. And I think the technology, you know, week in, week out, is progressing. And we think it's the future. Obviously, it's always got to be approved by the FIA, by F1, but they're fully behind it at the moment. Interestingly, it's also already being rolled out with some golfers as well on their golf bags.
What a wild world we live in.
I think the point is for technology like that, if it can be proven in a global showcase, which is kind of so intense, like Formula One running at fast pace, it's an awesome showcase to launch that kind of tech. And at our heart, we're obviously a brand that likes to be pioneers and be first at doing things. So it was a really nice opportunity for us as well.
Well, Christian kind of tapped into you guys being those pioneers, igniting it and seeing if the rest of the Formula One will join on board and do the same thing. As it relates to liveries and your storytelling, I think McLaren has done just that over the years. Is there anything else over the course of this season in particular even that we all as fans of what you guys put out in the storytelling that you do should be excited about?
One of the liveries that we've worked on for a number of years has been around a program called Driven by Change. This is a slightly different livery opportunity, but I think it's one that we all feel pretty passionate about, actually. Driven by Change is whereby an underrepresented artist gets an opportunity to design the livery. For the last couple of years now, two female artists have done that, actually. And at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, we've unveiled the livery. And I think giving someone the opportunity to see their artwork in front of millions of people at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix is just awesome. And 2 years ago, the artist was called Rabab. And then last year, she passed the baton to another fantastic lady called Anna. And I was out in Abu Dhabi last year and met up with Rabab, and just seeing the difference that had made in her career. She was an artist in the Middle East. She was doing okay, but suddenly she's thrown onto this kind of global platform to showcase her artwork. And it was brilliant seeing her. And I think that's, again, a kind of different take on these livery swaps. But again, giving someone that opportunity is a really powerful platform that we can offer up as well.
Lou, could talk about liveries all day. It's been such a fascinating insight. Really appreciate you joining us here on F1 Explains and explaining all about liveries.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much to Lou and McLaren and Marcus at Alfa Romeo. Christian, I don't know about you, but there was so much that I didn't know across this episode.
I always think that. It always teaches me something. I do enjoy doing this podcast. It's what we're all about. Now, remember, this is the podcast where you can ask us anything you like about F1 and we'll find the right people to answer it for you. You can email us whyw@f1.com. Let us know what you think about the show too. That is exactly what these guys did. We've had so many emails recently. We're very sorry we can't read all of them out, but I promise that every single one does get read. So real quick shout outs to Miriam from Georgia, Natalie from Australia, Nate from California, Far from Malaysia, Jemiah in Delaware, and Pamela in Texas. Just some of the people who have emailed to say nice things about the show. Thank you very much for listening. And of course, Pamela in Texas, or from anywhere, you can travel there, of course. We hope to see you at the US Grand Prix in Austin for our live show. We've also got a couple of emails about things we've mentioned on previous episodes. Now, first, remember we had a question from Mike in the mysterious Naptown, Katie? And we weren't exactly sure where that was, because there's loads of nap towns. Katie was adamant it was in Indianapolis, Indiana, but there are a few places that use that nickname. Mike has confirmed that he is indeed from Katie's hometown of Indianapolis. So that's that confirmed. We've sorted that, Katie. That's good.
My dad responded to me after listening to the episode and said that Naptown was for sure Indy. And I was like, man, I don't know. And I'm second guessing everything that I know. But my dad literally wanted to confirm that it was Indy as well. So thank you for the full circle part of that story.
Well done, Katie's dad, and in fact, Katie.
Finally, we have an email from Christian. He says, hi, this is from Christian to Christian. In regards to your comment in the steering wheel episode about putting phones or steering wheels in rice to dry them out if they get wet, it's actually been proven to do more harm than good because of it barely having any drying effect while introducing dust and other stuff to the wet phone. Turns out it's better to drop your F1 steering wheel in products created to dry electronics safely and effectively and leave rice for eating or wetting.
Producer Chris has added a note to our script, Katie. It says here, people throw rice instead of confetti sometimes at weddings. I didn't know this.
That is very true.
Since when?
We got to get you to more weddings.
Producer Chris also looked up the wet phone in rice thing, and he backs up Christian's point that it does apparently have more mixed results. And Chris also says here, be careful you don't end up with rice stuck up your charging hole. No one wants that. Well, no, that'd be terrible, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no, but It's terrible. Yeah, nobody wants that.
Although it did work for me once. I did dry out a phone.
I think I have too.
Rice. It did work. Yeah. If you missed that episode, you don't know what we're talking about. Go back and listen to our steering wheels episode. We were basically saying that steering wheels have to get, you know, work when they're wet. And I asked if you put it in rice like you do a phone, but apparently that's mixed results. Anyway, we need to go because I feel like this podcast quality is declining rapidly. So, Katie, see us out.
I like it. I like the fact you can learn about F1 and other things here at F1 Explains. Anyways, y@f1.com is the address for your emails and your voice notes. We'd love it if you would leave us a rating or a review or hit follow button so you never miss an episode. And if you want even more official F1 podcasts, Tom Clarkson has F1 Beyond the Grid covered and F1 Nation. There's also F1.com, F1 TV, and F1's official social media channels, so make sure you never miss a thing from the world of Formula One.
I wonder if F1 has its own branded rice. I'll find out. Anyway, keep the emails coming in. And don't forget about our live show in Austin. Do come and see us if you're there. I promise you the chat will be better than what we've just been talking about there. And of course, me and Katie will be back here next week for some higher quality F1 Explains. We look forward to that. Bye for now.
I think the rice is a great addition.
Katie, we should go. We should go. Let's quit while we're not ahead. Bye, everyone. Bye. Bye.